takes me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time for Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsborough. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
What are we discussing this week?
We're going to meet Lillian Gibbons. She was a journalist who spent 3 decades writing a chatty weekly column in the Winnipeg Tribune. Of course, it was a daily newspaper here in Winnipeg for many, many years. Through her work, she helped Manitobans to gain a deeper appreciation of the province's architectural history, especially many buildings that are, well, now gone.
So let's start with a bit of a profile. Who was Lillian Gibbons?
Well, she was the elder of 2 daughters born to English immigrants Ernest and Alice Gibbons. Her early childhood was marked by tragedy. Her younger sister Mildred died when Lillian was just 6, and her parents separated 3 years later, leaving her and her mother to fend for themselves for the rest of their lives. Despite these hardships, Lillian was by all accounts an excellent student and was remarkably well educated by the standards of the time. I mean, this was over 100 years ago, and, you know, at that time, women didn't always have the educational opportunities they have today. She earned an undergraduate degree in history from the University of Manitoba, graduating with a gold medal, and then she went on to complete a master's degree in history in 1929. It was unheard of for most people of any kind to have a postgraduate degree, and she had one. She went to work for the Winnipeg Tribune, and she might have been the most academically accomplished person in the newsroom, but I don't think that got her very far ahead. Like other women in the profession, she was given beats that covered teas, weddings, luncheons, the kind of news that male editors assumed would appeal to female readers. One such assignment was her weekly Tribune column called The Album of Winnipeg Women. It profiled noteworthy local women for the female audience. You know, but in September of 1935, she launched a new series that I think had wide appeal. It was called Stories Houses Tell, and it explored the histories of buildings. And most of them were homes, occasionally others, and the lives of the people who inhabited them. Now, the column ran almost every Saturday. There were occasional gaps here and there, especially when she was maybe traveling somewhere. And it started in 1935. It continued until the mid-1960s. And I think it was read with fervor by both women and men.
I mean, she sounds like the original Gordon Goldsborough.
Well, I suppose in a way, although she had formal credentials as a historian, and I don't.
So what did a column look like?
Each installment of Stories Houses Tell typically featured a large photo of the building in question, accompanied by its history, when it was built, by whom, and the notable events that had unfolded within its walls or around the neighborhood over the years. Occasionally, Lillian took the title literally. She'd write as though the house itself were speaking. You know, back in 18 so-and-so, I used to have a blah, blah. And I think that was really kind of fun, too. And, you know, the fact is that the houses she talked about were all over Winnipeg, surrounding municipalities. But occasionally, you know, when there might have been an intriguing structure somewhere else, you know, maybe when she was on the road, she featured houses in places like Ottawa, Quebec City, Minneapolis, even London, England a couple of times. Many of the buildings she profiled were on the brink of demolition at that time. Yet through her columns, she preserved rare and valuable details about these long-lost structures, information that in many cases existed nowhere else.
Can you give us an example?
Well, okay, so there was a column published in January of 1937 where she described 3 distinctive houses in a row along Main Street at the northwest corner of its intersection with York Avenue. So it's pretty industrial and sort of business-oriented today. 2 of those houses were made of brick, 1 in the middle was made of wood, and they were built in the early 1870s. In other words, they were very early in Manitoba's history. They originally served as respectively the post office, the customs office, and the land titles office for, of course, the federal government. The new federal government, it hadn't been in office for very long in Manitoba. And in addition to providing, you know, government office space, the upstairs of these buildings, because I think they were 2 or maybe even 3 stories, they have living space for the civil servants, you know, back in the day when you'd literally live at work. All three of these buildings were still standing in 1937, and that's 60 years later. And by that time, they were no longer government offices. They actually were headquarters for three military units, the Winnipeg Grenadiers, the 90th Winnipeg Rifles, and the Queen's Own Cameron Highlanders. She offered detailed descriptions of their interiors. You know, she talked about the texture of the floors from all those soldiers trooping over them over the years. Today, look, they're gone. There's a modern office tower on the spot. But thanks to Lillian's column, well, their story lives on.
So when did Stories Houses Tell end?
I don't know exactly. The final installment that I could find using digitized newspapers was in January of 1966. And it featured a two-story residence on Broadway, built in 1904 for wholesale grocer Robert Wilson. Now, that name probably doesn't resonate today. In fact, the Wilson family moved out in fairly short order after the house was built. But over the years, it served a number of functions, including the home for the clinic, which was a community health facility. People will probably recognize that one. And today, it is still there. The building was not demolished. It houses the West Broadway Community Organization. So that was, I think, as far as I know, the last episode of Stories Houses Tell. And I don't really know why it ended. I don't think it was lack of material. You know, after all, the demolition of significant historic buildings continues right to this day. But what remains after this 30-odd years of writing is an absolutely remarkable and comprehensive archive. More than 300 essays that document Manitoba's early architecture, and many of them preserving details that would otherwise have been lost.
Can listeners read any of Lillian's work?
Yeah, absolutely. There are several places you can see it. The original newspaper columns in the Tribune have been digitized. And if you want to read them, you go simply to the website of the University of Manitoba Libraries. There's a huge collection of back issues of the Tribune there. And as long as you know the day of the week that it was always published on a Saturday, you just find out what date corresponds to a Saturday, and you can find one of the episodes of Stories Houses Tell. That's one way. Another way is that you can go to the Manitoba Historical Society website, because from 1945 to 1978, she wrote numerous articles about old buildings, and we've digitized them all. So to make it easy for people to find them, go to the following address, mhs.ca/Gibbons. And there you'll find a short biography of Lillian. It'll tell you more about her than I've said here. So, for example, it'll mention her unusual fashion sense. I won't say any more about it. But it also has a list of her articles that she wrote for the MHS, and the full text is there. And if you're really old school and you want to read Lillian's stories on paper, there is a way to do it.
And what's that way?
Well, in 1978, the Junior League of Winnipeg, that's an organization of women dedicated to philanthropic work, they published 64 of Lillian's columns in book form. Now, remarkably, Lillian herself, who was in retirement by this time, she read each column and, where possible, she updated the information to reflect changes that had occurred since the original publication. The resulting book, Lillian Gibbons's Stories Houses Tell. And it became a runaway bestseller. So it's now out of print, but there are copies. I searched, for example, the Winnipeg Public Libraries, and I found, I think, five copies of it there. So absolutely, you can still find it easily. I found it numerous times in used bookstores. There are copies all over the place. And that book is, I think, a lasting testament to her legacy and the public's enduring interest in Manitoba's architectural past.
What happened to her in the end?
Well, she retired from the Tribune in 1972, and she lived quietly in the same apartment she occupied for 60 years. I mean, just think of that alone. You live in the same place 60 years. A revealing glimpse into her personality, though, and the reason why I sort of giggled there a minute, comes from an incident that occurred shortly before her death. So in 1996, at the age of 89, she was on a cruise along the Amazon River. And she reportedly told her fellow passengers, "If I die before we get to shore, just throw me overboard." You know, when I first read that, I thought, wow, that sounds exactly like some of the feisty women in my own family. My Aunt Laura and my grandmother Ida, they would have said something exactly like that. Now, well, it turns out Lillian did pass away during that trip, But luckily, her fellow travelers did not follow her instructions. They did not roll her overboard. To my knowledge, her body was returned to Winnipeg and buried beside her mother in Elmwood Cemetery. But throughout her life, she was a savvy investor. She was known for taking bus trips all over North America to attend stockholder meetings of the companies in which she held stocks. So after her death, it was revealed that her estate totaled $500,000. You know, and she directed it to be distributed among her favorite charities. So not only did Lillian Gibbons enrich our understanding of Manitoba's architectural history, she left behind a lasting financial legacy, too.
What a fascinating character, Gordon. Thank you so much for bringing this to us.
Well, she really does deserve to be remembered for many reasons. And say, she was an interesting person.
From the start as well, right? Like her mum was a single parent at that time. I wonder what that must have been like. So thank you so much. Really enjoyed that. What's up for next week?
Well, in this series, we've considered many forms of abandonment. Abandoned buildings, abandoned vehicles, abandoned cultural practices, abandoned forms of government, abandoned waterways, abandoned baseball fields, you name it. We've talked about it and a whole lot more. But I don't think we have ever talked about abandoned trees. So that's going to be our topic next week, along with a visit to a Winnipeg company that is giving those trees new life.
And you worry about running out of ideas.
Never, never.
Thank you, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.